Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Hello, all.
Sup, dog?
You're back with the ghetto.
I am so street, you have
and
no
it,
idea.
It really suits you, it really does.
I was born and raised on the mean streets of Utica.
What was that line in The Jerk?
I was born a poor black
child
in
Mississippi, something like that. So we're back at it again, another one of these crazy shows.
Yeah, we're the bloodthirsty vegetarians.
What's your name?
My name is Rico and Suave. John Tellerico.
This is Rich Wilgus, and collectively, we are bloodthirsty. Or not.
Yep, that's it. Game over. That's all.
Game over, man. Why don't you put her in charge?
Yeah, and you'll notice that we throw out some of these very odd references.
That was Hudson from Aliens.
Yes. No, that was actually Rich.
Yeah, doing Hudson from Aliens.
Yeah. So what's in the news?
Well, I guess we can close out our World Cup intro, the intro of the show where we talk about the... my point being, this will be the last time we have to talk about the World Cup for 4 years.
That's right.
So who won, John?
The Italians.
They did. They
the guys
beat
in the
French.
Blue shirts.
They beat the French. I must say that my overall comment on this year's World Cup was a little lackluster. So many games went to shootouts, and that's just a crappy way to end a soccer game.
Nobody wants to see that, especially in the final.
I mean, I think a lot of Americans do. Ooh, lots of goals, lots of scoring, you know? But, I mean, if you're really into soccer, you want to see it settled in regulation play, you know? You really do.
And every 4 years, the question comes up, should they have shootouts in these final matches?
Yeah. But, I mean, there were so many. Every game I watched ended in a shootout, you know? And it's like, oh, uncle, killing me.
Yep.
So what was the big news of that game? Say it.
Headbutt.
And I got to tell you, John, that was the best header of the tournament. I mean, you know, if you're that guy who got flattened, it's got to be a little embarrassing because
Materazzi,
he got nailed. I mean, just totally got his ass planted on the carpet,
got
you know?
This bald head coming right square in the chest. I'd go down quickly, too.
Man, you know what, though? Granted, that's not sportsmanlike play, and I'm not defending his behavior at all because he deserved the red card. But I do think that guy Materazzi must have said something. I don't think Zidane turns around
just randomly
behaves like that. You know, he is a pretty classy player. He has had something like 18 red cards in his career. Fine, right? You're going to get red cards. I don't know what that is, if that's an average amount or not.
I think it's high.
It might be, but still, you know, I don't think in a World Cup final that guy comes at you and headbutts you that violently unless the other guy said something. And, you know, we don't know. We'll never know. It's one word against another.
Yeah, and I heard someone, I don't even remember where, saying that they're watching the replay, and I saw this as well. It was right before that play, Materazzi had grabbed and was holding him.
Yeah, you could see it, yeah.
But that happens all the time in the game, so he's not going to get upset about that. He's not going to go hog wild on him and you know, give him with the horns, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. So he must have been doing something.
Yeah, I think so. And the other big news is Tour de France, of course. We are through the Pyrenees, and a really strange thing happened a couple stages ago. Floyd Landis, American, rides for Phonak, took the yellow jersey.
Long live Phonak!
Exactly. He took the yellow in a pretty epic mountaintop finish. There were a couple stages in a row in the Pyrenees, and the second stage was one Ors category climb and like four category one climbs, so it was a brutal, brutal stage. And what was really cool about that stage was two of the top three finishers in the stage were Americans. Levi Leipheimer and Landis were second and third. And I think it was Denis Menchov who won the stage. And that put Landis in the yellow jersey. And he had it for a couple of days. And then in like yesterday's stage, something really strange happened. A breakaway. It's a flat stage. They were out of the Pyrenees. And there was a breakaway. Five guys took a flyer. They're off away from the peloton. And the peloton just let them increase their lead and increase their lead. Got up to 20 minutes, 23, 24, 25, 26, 28 minutes. And the best place rider in GC, in general classification, in the breakaway was 28 minutes behind the yellow jersey. they actually let him win the yellow jersey by winning the breakaway by like 29 or 30 minutes. Really weird. And it wouldn't have taken much effort from the Phonak team at the front of the peloton to just reel back in a couple minutes, you know, to win back some time. And I think Landis did it for a purely tactical reason. Now that the other team has the yellow jersey, they have to defend it and get tired in the next few stages before the Alps. Because today was, I can't say it was a flat stage because there were two Category 2 climbs and they ended up being brutal because it was 100 degrees. But tomorrow is a rest day, Monday, and then Tuesday is Alpe d'Huez, one of the really infamous stages of the tour. And I think Landis's whole message was, I'm going to crush this guy in the next set of mountains anyway, so if he has the yellow now, he's not going to have it at Tuesday night. You know, that's
brilliant strategery.
Exactly. Although if that were Team Discovery with Lance Armstrong at the helm, there's no way they give up the yellow jersey. They keep it, you know.
Well,
I don't know what they were thinking.
Pride thing.
Yeah, well, I would have. So anyway, the guy who is now in the yellow jersey is Oscar Pereiro, and Landis is second, and Dennis Menchoff is third, and then there's a bunch of other guys, you know, some of the strong guys. The German guy, Andreas Kloden, he was my pick for second place. We'll have to see how he does. But anyway, there you go. Tour de France update. Alps starts soon. It's going to be exciting.
Stuff, though. There's
what,
other
what?
Stuff in the
what
news.
What other stuff? What?
Sports-wise.
Oh, no.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
Who's he?
Race car driver.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
F1 driver. He's been driving for McLaren for a while. He announced, what did he announce? He's leaving F1, and you know where he's going?
NASCAR.
NASCAR.
Yeah, I heard that.
He's going to be a NASCAR driver.
That's a little embarrassing. I must say I'm a little embarrassed.
Well, you know, he's going to have to give up the whole right turn thing. Well, he's got a couple of races that have right turns in them.
Yeah. Yeah, they go to the Glen. Well, they used to anyway. Does
they go
NASCAR
to the Glen
still go to the Glen? Except they took the boot out. They took the hardest part of the course out.
Yep.
Eh.
They slow it down a little bit, too. And then Sears Point, they do right turns here and there.
Yeah.
But then Danica Patrick is also probably going to be going to NASCAR, too.
Yeah, I heard that, too. And who I heard some driver said a very, very, very nasty thing.
Richard Petty?
Richard Petty?
Richard Petty has said women have no place in the business.
Well, no, that wasn't the comment. One of the drivers, and I don't know what from what group the driver was, but made a that time of the month statement. You know, she drives more aggressively during that time
man.
Of the month. And that's just, you know, whatever. That's just so immature.
Yeah, well, we'll see how she does. I mean, I think someone said, do you think you can handle those cars? And she said, yeah, because in NASCAR they have power steering. I don't have power steering in my car.
You know what they also have that's utterly confusing to me is carburation.
That's right.
I don't get that. And I've said this for years, but every car on every road of America is fuel injected and they're still using carburetors. What's going on there?
Yeah. These cars are not stock cars by any stretch of the imagination.
No, there's nothing stock about them. They've got, you know, custom bodywork, racing suspension.
Their headlights are stickers.
The closest thing to being stock is maybe the block, you know. Maybe they're using a block that remotely approaches something you would find.
The block maybe is using some of the same metals that are used in a current
I just don't
production.
Get the carburation thing, but anyway, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, so a lot of strangeness going on. I just think it's kind of bizarre that one of the top F1 drivers in the past 5 or 6 years at least is going to NASCAR.
I'm confused by it. Well, who was it? Nigel Mansell went over to IndyCar Series from Formula One for one season also.
Yeah.
Did pretty good on the road courses. Well, I mean, he was a Formula One champion, so he's one of the best drivers in the world.
Yeah.
I think he only did it for a season, though.
I think that he just did it, like, on a lark. But
it was a lark.
Yeah. I think
it was a total lark.
I think JPM is doing it for money, and I don't think he can really compete in F1 anymore.
Well, those F1 guys make good money.
I think he's totally loaded.
Yeah. And the best F1 drivers probably make more than NASCAR drivers, I would think.
Yeah, just salary-wise, these guys
exactly.
are making $20, $30 million.
Yeah.
And then I think there was one year when Michael Schumacher, this is one of his early championship seasons, I think that they calculated that he was making something like $150 million. And that was just in endorsements. And his salary was like 30-something million.
That's almost as much as Oprah.
Oprah. Oprah signing one book, that's how much she gets.
She, by the way, went over to NASCAR as well, I think.
She did. Yeah. She did. And I think that Star Jones, she's doing it. She went from The View. She needs a ride. So she went over to NASCAR.
NASCAR thing. Well, there you go. So what are we drinking today?
Hooch. This is 1994 Hooch. It's a Ravenwood Vintner's Blend. It's a 2003 Southeastern Australian Shiraz. Martin's going to have to tell us if this is a good one or not, but I like it. It's pretty good.
Yep. It's a little bit tart, but I'm liking it.
Yeah.
So we got a tune.
Tune Edge.
I think we got a tune. We played this guy before, Paul Angerosa, smoking strat guy. The man's got the funk.
That's the second song. Now, this is called Blind Faith.
He does have the funk, though.
Sure.
So let's show the people the funk.
Believe everything you're told, you're gonna need blind love. All that you can find, if you don't turn it up, shut him out.
Wow, long fade, man.
Long intro, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were just kicking around this song before we were recording, and I said, man, if I heard that intro when we were doing our show, I would have gonged it.
The gong
was pretty
show.
Long, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good thing I didn't.
Smoking
it was
tune, though. Yeah, that was the one that we would have been making a mistake on had we ganged it.
Yeah.
I guess the rule should be you have to get past the sort of sound effect intro to see the song, except sometimes with the things we were listening to, it was hard to tell the song from the sound effect intro. So,
you have to get past that hard candy shell. To get to the
soft,
chocolate.
Creamy center.
Soft nougat center. Yeah, so, comparing music to nougat.
What is nougat exactly? Does anybody know?
Yes, nougat. If you look it up, it contains 100% nougat.
I mean, is that what prospectors used to search for in the gold rush? I mean,
yeah, panning for nougat. No, nougat is, I think it's essentially corn syrup or sugar, and it's whipped together with...
It's in Milky Ways. I know that much.
I think there's an egg in there somewhere, and it's fluffed together with nuts.
So that's the nougat.
There was a question somewhere. I can't remember if it was trivia or something.
I guarantee Wikipedia knows the answer.
What are these three ingredients heated and whipped up? And I think the answer was nougat, and I think it was sugar, eggs, and nuts.
It could have been also the thing you used to see on the dry cleaning businesses, Sanforizing. You know,
nobody quite.
Yeah, it's the same stuff as nougat, I think.
Sanford and Son?
Can be seen on Nick at Night or one of those shows.
Yeah.
So, you big dummy!
So you know what came out of the show last week?
Tell me. This is all you, man.
My desire to play more music.
And that in itself is a good thing.
Yeah, and what we do is every single week we fish for music. We go through that process like the Gong Show. Of course, we don't have it recorded every time, but we go through that process and look for good stuff. We call up old friends and beg and plead for podcasting rights.
By the way, I have a friend with a music store in Santa Cruz, and it's called More Music.
I want more music.
Oh, actually, you know the song we played? You remember the that sort of 1920s Euthanasia? Remember the band Euthanasia?
Yes.
We played before that? He works at a store called More Music.
More Music.
Moremusic.com.
Cool. So anyways, I just got thinking, you know, there are some times when I'm in the mood to hear a specific song that just so happens to be not pod safe. And it would be fun to just play that music and expose that music to other people who might not be listening to it. We were kicking around ideas like, oh man, what about this and that? And what about Tarkus? We'd love to play Tarkus. You know, that would be
15,
cool.
15, an entire, yeah.
Not many people listen to Tarkus, especially on the radio.
That's a whole show, though.
Yeah, right, but maybe one or two excerpts. But I'm thinking it would be great to play that stuff, but mm-hmm. We're sort of stifled, you know? We can't do that. And while it's great to be able to pull out some of this PodSafe stuff and expose musicians who don't get a lot of exposure to the world and our phenomenally magnificent audience of, what, 30?
29.
It's dwindling. But anyways, we get to get new music out there and expose ourselves to this new music, which is great. But I want to play some stuff that I've grown to love over the years, too. You know, I've got that desire.
John and I are both fans of prog rock, progressive rock and roll, mm-hmm. kind of a holdover from the 70s, pretty much,
yeah,
you know.
I won't give it up.
Most of the bands that we like, of course, are not around anymore, and nobody's really writing music quite like that anymore. Although you do find some holdouts. I found a great band called, I can't remember the name, but what was the band you discovered from Israel?
Trespass.
Trespass, yeah. Phenomenal stuff, a little reminiscent of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, the guys who wrote Tarkus. So, yeah, so John hits me with an email last week, and the whole thing was, let's play some copyrighted music. And what was your argument?
My argument was, let's play some copyrighted music or I'll cry. No, I want to play some copyrighted music because, one, we're exposing that music to people who aren't going to be getting it on the radio, okay? We're promoting this stuff. We're not gaining any money out of it. We're obviously not getting paid for this.
Yet.
And if someone has a problem with it, we'll definitely get some exposure. And we're definitely going to be getting some legal representation because there are people fighting the same battle. But in the meantime, let's improve the show and let's add some good content and break down some barriers.
Well, what you were thinking was that the ACLU or the EFF, who is probably in the midst of battles like these right mm-hmm. now, would come to our aid. And okay, they might. Definitely.
And even if they don't, the first step in this whole process is a cease and desist letter. You know, it's not like they're going to immediately blast us and then we're going to be going to jail. We're going to, you know, be told to stop first, and then we can see where it goes from there. But we're not necessarily going to be playing the music and distributing it. We're not a distributor. We could talk over the intros, if there is one, talk over the outro. It's not, we're not doing full copying of the music, so you're not getting the music right from the CD. So, you know, there are some arguments, and the EFF is definitely fighting these same arguments, is that when people are broadcasting or podcasting this stuff, they're not distributing it.
Well, the argument, the counter argument I heard is that a podcast is distributing it, because if we have 1,000 listeners, 1,000 copies of that song are being made when someone downloads it to their computer. If our show was on 1,000 computers, there are 1,000 copies of that song now that we, in essence, had a hand in distributing.
Yeah, but in any lawsuit, the assumption has to be that some damage has been done in order for someone to win a lawsuit. What damage are we doing by doing that?
Well, I think they would make the argument that they weren't paid. The damage is simply that they were not immediately compensated for the copy.
And had we not broadcasted that music, would their lives have been better?
Well, you could make that argument to Lars Ulrich and Metallica, too.
And I will, if I get a chance.
Right. Now, see, John's... Now, I'm usually the big rebel guy. I'm usually the guy wanting to burn stuff down and cause trouble. And John...
Call the president a wiener.
Yeah, I'm the guy calling them a fascist and throwing all the F-words around. Freedom, you know, things like that. And
fanfare.
Yep, and common men. And John's the guy throwing out the let's play copyrighted music stuff. I was a little surprised. My personal feelings on it are this, and I actually, my reply to John's email was, I need to think about it. And I've talked about this with some friends whose opinions I value a great deal.
He didn't talk to me about it, obviously.
Not yet. I was waiting for the show. And my opinion is kind of this. A, we haven't had trouble finding really cool music to play, you know, like the song we just played.
And my response to that is, it's not an either or thing.
Fine. That's fair.
End of story. You're done. Okay, now what?
My other response is just fair play. You know, as a person who doesn't always like to play by the rules, but knows a lot of musicians and wants to show some respect for those guys, I, for example, would love to play Gentle Giant, you know, my favorite band in the world. I'd love to play, and I am in negotiations with them, although they have yet to reply to my email. That's the funny
one-sided
thing.
Negotiation.
Well, it's not a one-sided negotiation. The funny thing is, I've been talking to Carrie Minier's wife, Leslie, the keyboardist's wife, and she's like, oh yeah, Ray Shulman, the bassist, he and Carrie handle all the intellectual property stuff now. She said to email him, she gave me Ray Shulman's address. She told me that Ray Shulman was looking forward to hearing the argument I was going to make about making some of the music pod safe and why it would be a good thing. So I fired off this really nice letter to Ray Shulman a month or two ago, and I haven't heard from Ray, so I have to send that email to remind him again.
So let's just play this stuff and wait to hear from him.
Yeah, but because I respect Gentle Giant, I don't want to play their stuff without permission.
No,
I
would had you not already opened up that line of conversation and started the process, then yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying let's play their stuff. Let's play stuff.
I would love to play. Well, give me an example of what you want to play right now. Name a song.
Okay, we were just kicking around. Rich was telling me, hey, let's go to Asia. Let's go see this Asia show in Rochester that they're showing, you know. And I said, you know what, I don't necessarily want to see these guys because I've seen a lot of these guys in concert before, and I'm really not a big Asia fan, even though they're going to be playing some of the old tunes that I love from Yes and King Crimson and ELP. But I would love to be able to play that stuff, and it got me thinking, hey, I should just crank some of these tunes out. It would be fun. And let other people know what kind of music is out there or has been out there in the past. So let's play some ELP. Let's play some Yes. Let's play some Crimson.
Okay, so the stuff you want to play is definitely not popular stuff, by any stretch of the imagination. And that's what I'd want to play, too. And my thought was the total number of bands that we probably want to play is like 20. You know, if we could, we'd probably each have 10 bands that we'd love to play. You know, I'd love to throw a little Dixie Dregs on here and little Gentle Giant and a bunch of the other bands I like too, but I'm still not comfortable. I'm not entirely comfortable with it. I don't know why. Maybe I'm a weenie.
I'm waiting.
No, we didn't stop recording.
No, I'm waiting.
Suddenly, maybe what?
I'm giving you the silent treatment until you do it. No, I think I'm not going to necessarily break any of these tunes out and submerge Rich here on air, but I definitely think that we should push this issue. And if you've got any opinions on this, you out there in listener land, I want to hear it.
Definitely want to hear from the listeners on this. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today. I want to know what everybody thinks.
And I don't necessarily think that, you know, we're going to run out of music if we play all the bands that we love, you know, maybe those 20 bands that we love, because I certainly think that it would be fun to maybe play some music that our listeners like that we aren't exposed to that is not pod safe. You know, get some suggestions out there in
that
the listening
would be
world.
Kind of cool. Well, in fact, here's the argument I gave Ray Shulman, the Gentle Giant bassist, with respect to my pitch to him was to make one song from all of their albums pod safe. That's okay. Let's say they were around in the day when albums were albums. They were LPs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you didn't have as much time on a record as you did on a CD. So maybe they were 8 or 10 songs. So let's say 10 songs. So 10% of their catalog would become pod safe, and they could pick one song. Hopefully it would be a good one. Put it on the Pod Safe Music Network. And in so doing, maybe they would start getting downloaded again, mm-hmm. and people would start getting exposure to their shows. And on shows, they would be getting exposure to their music. And this is an audience, this pod safe generation, that probably many of whom weren't even born when the last Gentle Giant record came out, which was like 80 or 81, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's not like Gentle Giant and King Crimson and ELP and Yes and all of these bands are getting any airplay anymore. They're really not. Occasionally, you're going to hear Lucky Man on, you know,
as bumper music on a on a radio station, a classic rock station.
Yeah, and occasionally, you're going to hear, I don't even know what, you're going to hear In the Court of the Crimson King, mm-hmm. maybe, or something like that. And I honestly can't say that I've ever heard any Giant on the radio, unless I requested it, mm-hmm. and they have played some stuff. But that was my pitch to Ray Shulman, you know? You're going to be exposed to a whole new generation. Why wouldn't you want to make a few of your songs pod safe? You know, maybe you sell a few hundred more records. Maybe you sell a few thousand more records, you know? And they got those two new DVDs out that I reviewed on recent shows. I mean, there's a lot of material out there for people to be exposed to as well. I think it's only in their advantage to make some of their songs pod safe.
Well, and I was listening to a show on IT Conversations. It was a conference in a panel from a Web 2.0 conference, I think. And one of the panel members was one of the guys from Grateful Dead. Obviously, I can't remember his name because I was never a Deadhead.
Probably was not Garcia.
No, I was thinking it was not Jerry Garcia. But the question was about DRM and all of that. And this guy, he just kept saying, look, you know, we were in the record business for a long time before we started selling records. And our opinion was we had one choice. We got to this point where we had one choice. A lot of people were coming to the shows with recording equipment. A lot of people were coming to the shows and their intent was to record it to share the music with friends. Okay. So we said to ourselves, do we want to alienate these people and be the police and stop them and really make asses of ourselves? Or do we want to say, fine, do what you're going to do anyways, really, and we'll see where it goes. And they essentially said, these performances you're taking part in, they're partly yours. You can record that. And that's what Bela Fleck does as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of bands, and Bela's one of them.
Right. But
Fish and, you know, all the jammy bands, you know.
Yep. And they said, look, you know what? If it wasn't for that policy of giving away the music, sure, the performance is one part of it, giving away something. If you don't give something away, he said, we wouldn't have been selling anything. We weren't selling any records until we started doing this. We got exposed to a whole group of people who never have been to the shows, who've never heard of us. People were handing these tapes over to each other. And then they sold tons of records because they wanted to get the official versions. They wanted to collect the official versions. They wanted to hear it right from the source. So I'm saying the same thing. You know, let's give some of this stuff away on their behalf.
Well, that's right. the rub, isn't it?
And they will actually be benefiting more than us not doing this.
Well, I think there's a lot of validity to that argument. I'm just not entirely sure how comfortable I am in the spirit of fair play and in the spirit of not wanting to go to jail.
I don't think that there's any danger whatsoever that jail time is forthcoming.
Well, I don't know, though.
Even the Napster guy wasn't even threatened with jail.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The most he was ever threatened with was money.
But my biggest thing is fair play, and I do have respect for the – and I agree with you completely. As I said with my Gentle Giant argument, we're going to be doing these guys a favor. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's playing King Crimson on the radio anymore. It just doesn't happen.
Nope.
Nobody's playing Giant. Nobody's playing ELP. Nobody's playing the Dixie Dregs. You know, Genesis still gets some airplay, you know.
But not the pre-1975 Genesis.
No, not at all. Nobody's playing Lamb. Nobody's playing Foxtrot. Nobody's right. playing Selling England. You know, nobody's playing the good stuff. I mean, they were actually, they had some records out in the MTV era too. You know, that mm-hmm. Invisible Touch record came out, you know, in the MTV era. So they made some videos.
Abacab.
And I don't remember seeing a video for that, but Abacab was kind of at the beginning of the early 80s MTV era.
But truth is, even the stuff that maybe we're not the biggest fans of, occasionally I'll think, you know, it would be great to just bust out some Zeppelin that they do play on the radio just for fun, you know, because it would be something that would lighten up the mood. It would be a great thing to just add some energy to the show occasionally for fun. And we're not necessarily doing any harm. Us playing one Led Zeppelin song for 100 people is not going to be hurting Led Zeppelin's bottom line.
No, it really isn't. And I don't think any of this stuff is hurting anybody's bottom line. These people are just so entrenched in this old business model and this whole idea, this intellectual property argument. It's a little ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I got to think about it more.
Have some more wine. You'll think about it.
Try the wine.
Let's finish off this bottle and then I'll get you signing.
Get another one.
Get you signing. I got one upstairs. We'll get you signing on a piece of paper what you're going to do.
What I'm going to do is just run and hide in a ditch.
Yeah, well, that was basically what the guy from the Dead was saying, is that, you know, we want to treat our fans with respect, and we felt that it wasn't really about making money, although some bands out there, that's really their primary intent. They want to be famous rock stars, but, you know, the Dead seemed to have a good thing going. You know, they wanted to play the music, they wanted to get those ideas out of their head, and they wanted to put it down, they wanted to perform it, and they wanted to enrich people's lives, and the money was like, let's have the money follow the thing that we love, and that's what happened. But part of it was, let's give people the stuff first, let's give them a taste, and then they'll come back. And I'm just saying that I wish that every band and every record label out there realized that if they gave something away and didn't treat their customers like criminals, and people like us, who are little tiny mini distributors, if that's what you want to call us, Rich.
Okay.
Treating us like criminals, they'd realize that we're actually going to help them out in the long run.
Well, I agree completely with the argument.
And I want to twist their arm and make them do it now.
We just want to jam their head against the wall, put our knee behind their neck like a criminal on Cops and say, you got to let us play your music. I don't know.
And even though our audience is fairly small, I think that this, I'm going to respect the fact that this isn't without risk, because I did some research the other night, and something like 20,000 people have already been sued and have already lost lawsuits for copying music.
Thanks.
I'm letting you know.
And I got to tell you, you know, those people, some of our listeners are tattletales. Dead silence here.
I'm waiting. I'm not saying anything
else. What
is
it you're waiting for? You were waiting for me to say something before. You know what?
I'm waiting for names.
Those who
names.
Hesitate are lost. Don't wait.
Okay. All right. Let's start playing them now.
Not at all. Let's got to think about this some more. Well, you know what? We definitely want to hear from you. We're going to have a blog entry on our, not our blog entry, but we're going to have a forum entry just about this, you know? And what I called the segment on our whiteboard today was, should we go to jail? So we're going to talk about this a little more. We invite all of you, even Sheila 92761, to post on our blog. But you know what one of her hobbies is? Anti-terrorism.
There you go.
Did you see that?
You know what? I think that if we were to play some copyrighted music, we would be preventing terrorism somewhere in this world.
Absolutely, we would. Well, so let's play some... Actually, this is copyrighted music, not Podsafe, as the other one is not either, but we have That's permission true. To play it.
Cool. Well, we're going to play another tune.
So this is like probably the last song from Red Herring we're going to play, because we played about five others, and this one is called The Devil's Funk.
Charcoal black, here in
Fish.
They can rock.
I love the herring. And the guys are in
Pickled?
That. Sometimes. The guys are in a new band. We played a couple of their songs.
Mm-hmm.
Modus. Mm-hmm. And they have a new record coming out. And he asked us, I think I've mentioned this in the past, if he could come on and kind of talk to us. We'd play a couple of their tunes and we could have a couple guys from the band on. It could be our sort of second official interview.
That would be fun.
We still got to nail down the interview with the guy we kind of wanted to interview.
Yeah, I know.
You know who I'm talking about?
I think so.
Who am I talking about?
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
The Wanker. Willy Wanker.
Willy Wonka?
No, no. Peter Ostrom.
Peter Ostrom.
Charlie.
Yeah. You know, when we first did this show, when we were first in the conceptual stages of the show, we said, you know, there's a local guy that we'd really like to get on. And he happens to
You can get on him, but I'm not mounting him at all.
He's a veterinarian. He's a local veterinarian up in, was it Boonville?
Somewhere around Boonville, yeah.
Yeah, he's...
He's a large animal vet, Peter Ostrom.
I mean, he works on large animals. He's not a large veterinarian. He's
quite medium build, he's, yeah. You know.
Yeah, Peter Ostrom. You might know him as Charlie Bucket from the original Willy Wonka show.
The show.
The Willy Wonka show, the original movie with Gene Wilder. Remember that?
That's
one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yep, yep. Love the original. Haven't seen the second one, can't say. You have.
Yeah, I saw it. I watched it with my kids, and I've got to say it was really, 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 really sad.
And you know, speaking of films we've never reviewed, one of our original things, one of our original episodes was going to be to review the third Star Wars film and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. We never talked about those ever, but if you search our blog and go
That's
back,
right.
you will find posts with us saying we're going to review those films, and we never have, and we're not going to do it tonight.
Okay, 2 second review, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Sucked.
It was all right. I was disappointed, but... On that note, I was in the bookstore the other day, and I found for $5 in the bargain bin, I found the leather-bound compendium of all of the Hitchhiker's books.
In leather?
In leather.
I have that leather-bound gilded one.
Got it for $5.
Well, what volume does it go up to?
Let's see.
Does it go up to the one that was written from his notes that he didn't actually write and editor put together?
What was the title of that one?
I don't
remember.
There's
So Long and Thanks for All the Fish was after...
There's Hitchhiker's Guide, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, and then...
The Restaurant at the End of the Universe.
The Restaurant at the End of the Universe. I have the book that has those three, the leather-bound one, plus the little short story called Zaphod Plays It Safe.
Yeah, I think it might be in there.
And then I have a non-leather bound one, which has the fourth book in there. You know, as the books come out, they keep adding it to that, but not in leather bound. I don't have the leather bound one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check to see what's in there. But I was amazed that I found that. Yeah, the movie was kind of disappointing because I love the book so much, and you really get more detailed information in the
book. It's such rich source material. They should have done better. It deserved a better film.
Yeah, and the third Star Wars movie, the third Star Wars movie, but technically the sixth filmed version, but it was number three in the series, sucked.
Well, I mean, it was better than Episode 1 and Episode 2.
Which really sucked.
Yeah, but it was the best Star Wars film since Episode 6.
On the scale of 1 to suck, it was suck.
I didn't think it was quite that bad, but I wasn't as
it makes you realize just
people.
What a horrible writer.
He is not a what?
George Lucas is.
He's a horrible
writer.
Well, what are you going to do?
I think
he hasn't made a good film since THX. I mean, let's just face it.
He hasn't made a good film since American Graffiti.
That was a great one.
Yeah.
The film out of which Happy Days was born, basically.
That is correct.
So anyway, I saw film. Speaking of film, saw film at the MWBA.org. The Notorious Betty Page looked like an interesting film. Saw some previews for it. It was sort of this loose documentary slay. It was not a documentary. I mean, it was a narrative, but it was kind of a film that...
Biopic.
It was a biopic that kind of focused in on her young adult years into her mid to late 30s. And
explain who Betty Page is.
I had never even heard of her.
Because my wife said the same thing. Because we saw the commercial for it when we were watching some movie, for this movie, Notorious Betty Page. And she said, "Who is Betty Page?" And I said, "You've got to be kidding me. You don't know who Betty Page is?"
I didn't know who she was either, but you know, if you've seen 50s and 60s pinups, she's probably in some of them. I mean, that's what it boils down to. But beyond that, she wasn't just a pinup girl, and this kind of thing was kind of frowned upon. Yes, every grease monkey in the 50s had these pinup calendars in their garage, but it wasn't considered wholesome. And by today's standards, this is stuff you can show your kids, you know, these pinups. I mean, those classic, you know, the kind of pinup girls you would see painted on the side of World War II aircraft and stuff. They're wearing like one-piece bathing suits and they have the 50s haircuts.
Well, back then, the bathing suits covered more than most people really understood.
People go to work in clothes that are more revealing than some of those swimsuits. However, the thing that was interesting about the movie was that she actually did some fetish films too, I guess it turned out. And by that, I mean there were a couple of people in New York who made films for wealthy clients. Like if you had a client who wanted to see 8-inch spike heels and all of these little weird fetish things, they would actually make a film.
This was before DVDs and VHS.
Way before. Yeah, this is 8 and 16 millimeter films. So these producers of these, I won't say questionable because they don't offend me at all, but these alternative fetish films. Underground films. They had a series of models that they would pay to put in these spike heel pumps and the leather. You know, these are clothes that Madonna wears on stage, right, by the way. You know, that kind of the cone bra type stuff.
Overdressed.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw the films and they showed actual, as the credits were rolling, they showed some of the real films and they were laughable. I mean, I can't see anybody getting titillated by these films at all. There's nothing titillating about them. Some of the films were of her spanking another woman, and it was not even real spanking. It was sort of like that Vonage commercial with the guy in the background sort of spanking the air. You know, they weren't actually doing it, you know, but fetish people, you know, if you got a heel fetish or a foot fetish, I guess you're going to like these films. And then that led to, in the 50s, Congress having hearings on pornography, and this stuff didn't even come close to approaching pornography. But at the end of the day, the film was made, 5 of the 6 producers were women, so they made a very, what I thought was fair film, because this woman needed to eat, just like everybody else, and she was a model. She did do a few nudes, they were tasteful, she was in one of the early Playboy issues, and I didn't really have a problem with any of the content that any of this showed, of course, but I'm not a product of the 50s. You know, I guess we'd probably be better talking about this with our parents to see what their opinion of this sort of material would have been in 1955. They also delved into the earlier part of her life, and they hinted at the fact that she might have had a sexually abusive father and she may have been raped and a couple other things as explanations for going into this sort of profession, but I don't see anything wrong with what she was doing. She was a model who allowed people to take photographs of her. And they made it perfectly clear that when these fetish films were being made, she wasn't being abused, although the point of the film was to show slightly what's the questionable behavior, mm-hmm. you know, ball gags and leather clothes and spiked right. heels. They were just laughing their asses off when they were making these films. You know, it was all a big joke. Imagine some big New York City lawyer is going to pay us a couple grand for this film. I mean, it was all a joke. And at the end of the day, the content of the film to me was laughable. I mean, it was just such a sort of non-serious approach to the subject, but apparently there was somebody in the world who was getting off on it, you know? I don't know. Whatever. And they hinted at the fact that she sort of got out of that profession. I don't know how much money she made. I'm sure she did fine. I'm sure she did well for herself. And she kind of got back into the whole Christian thing, being a minister or something, you know, and sort of preaching the word of God. Because the whole time she was doing this, she didn't have any conflicts with her religion at all, because to quote her, Adam and Eve were naked in the Garden of Eden and didn't actually put clothes on until they sinned. So there you go. I mean, I thought it was a nice work. I thought it was appropriately made. I like the fact that a woman directed it, and most of the production staff were women, because I think men probably wouldn't have treated it the same way as women, as delicately as women would have, because men are pigs. Anyway, it was a great film. I would definitely recommend seeing it. For the most part, the film was shot in black and white. It had a nice feel to it. It's a Mary Harron film, 2005, 91 minutes. And by the way, Gretchen Mol was the name of the actress who played Betty Page. I'd really recommend it. When I left the theater, I was kind of iffy on it. I was like, well, what was this movie trying to... It couldn't decide if it's a biopic, but it couldn't decide what it was trying to say. But at the end of the day, I kind of got it. And I think I liked it. And I think... No, I definitely liked it, and it's definitely worth seeing. So check it out. And for Ken, my old friend who can never remember what the name of the film is, by the end of the review, The Notorious Betty Page, B-E-T-T-I-E.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people have actually seen the hairdo that she made famous. It's kind of like that short cropped bangs and long black, like jet black hair.
That would be her.
Yeah, a lot of people have taken on that hairstyle just for, you know, for fun.
It's a fun retro look. I definitely like it. I'd recommend all you women out there, go with that haircut.
Yeah, and in this film probably points out the fact that, you know, it's making a big statement on the fact that our feelings and the way that we express ourselves sexually in public, that is has changed quite a bit. And our idea of what's obscene or lewd has changed quite a bit, because you turn on MTV today and you see a video and they're basically wearing thongs and barely wearing anything, and it's totally out there, and you had to get you had to pay some guy a chunk of money to make an 8mm film of someone wearing essentially something your mother would wear in the house during the day.
John was wearing a thong when I came over. I had to ask him to put some sweatpants on. Anyway, whatever. I'm making that up. That's fiction. So I'm calling it quits. That's the show.
Is that a show?
That's a show. What do you think? I guess that's a show. Anyway, check us out on the web. You can find our website at www.bloodyveg.com.
Yes, and make sure that you send us some internets through the tubes that is the internet. Perhaps they will find us if they're not being clogged with all this illegal music and movies.
We'll talk about that next week. John's being a little sarcastic and facetious there.
Yes, our email address is feedback@bloodyveg.com.
Go to the forum. Leave us all kinds of comments on this whole, should we go to jail, or more appropriately, should John go to jail, since I'm totally going to narc him out when they catch us.
Yeah, they're going to raid my house.
John's going to turn state's evidence and get a new identity. Anyway, yeah, check out the forum, and remember, you're listening to VIB.